We're going to talk tech now and take a look at, amongst other things, we're a gadget in a minute, but also Google searches, how they're working, and a new regulatory change. We're going to talk about all of that with Fevzi Turkalp from GadgetDetective.com. Morning, Fevzi.
Morning. So this is an interesting story on a number of levels. Anyone that uses Google will have noticed that Google's changed quite a lot in recent weeks and months and continues to change. And Google have got this policy of building their AI, their Gemini AI, into everything that they do. So, you know, their emails, but also their web searches. So now we have not just a simple Google search. When you do a normal Google search, you still at the bottom of the page get the links to various websites. But above it, you get an AI answer to your question. And this is very convenient. It's getting better. As AIs are continuing to improve and becoming hopefully a little bit more reliable. But it makes a problem because the Google search engine ceases to be a signpost to different websites and instead becomes the destination itself. Mm. It provides the answers. And the difficulty that provides is, well, then how do the websites that are having their information read and fed into this Google answer, how are they going to survive? Because if we're not actually reliably clicking through to those websites, we're not seeing advertising, we're not clicking on affiliate links, we're not subscribing, we could be decapitating not only these websites, but journalism generally.
That's a very good point, isn't it? Because if I am increasingly, like a lot of people, just taking the answer that comes up. Obviously, it's not always right, but I can see it's going to be more and more the case. And you end up not clicking on the link. So, is there a worry then that all of these websites are basically not going to exist in the future?
Yeah, these websites and journalism generally. Because, you know, in the end, if these businesses can't make money, and of course the BBC is different in this regard. The BBC has at least at the moment, a different funding model through the licence fee, so it could potentially survive. But commercial news and current affairs and reviews and almost any website that can be accessed by Google search will have this problem. Now, the CMA, which is the I forget what it's called, is it the Markets
Competition
Authority?
Competition
and Markets Authority. Yeah, what used to be called the Competition Commission. They've tried to improve the situation, and it's been reported yesterday that they made a decision that gives publishers in the UK the right to opt out of the Google AI overviews whilst remaining in the ordinary Google search. So on the face of it, this is obviously it's a good thing, but it doesn't really solve the problem in its entirety, because as the AI search becomes better and more prevalent, fewer and fewer people will click on the links that may still appear below. And ultimately, companies are given the choice of either having their content purloined or being invisible on the internet. Because if you know, a Google search doesn't reliably point to them in a way that people will actually use. So, it's not that there isn't attribution. It's just that people are not linking on it and increasingly will not click on it. So it's a real problem.
Mm. I was wondering about this because Google, for a lot of us, has been the sort of gateway to do everything on the internet.
Yeah. Yes.
You just Google it, and it's a verb in our language now.
Yeah.
But with all of this AI stuff coming along and different apps that don't even go on a normal web surfer, I wondered whether Google were concerned that they were going to, from being the king of the internet, they might actually not have much of a role. Because a lot of people I know don't even, they go straight to one of these AI apps.
Well, yeah, I mean, I look at it differently. I think Google more or less own the pipes of the internet.
Yeah.
Right? They've got the most popular
and they can carry on doing that, do you think, because of AI?
Yeah, well, I think, this situation is not great for them in the longer term either, because all right, the companies that go out of business, you know, the journalists go out of business, what are they going to link to and what are they going to summarise? So there's a number of possible solutions to this. None of them are perfect and none of them are easy. One is that Google can do licensing deals with companies. So it reportedly paid $60 million to Reddit for access to its posts and all the information within it. Now, that's okay, but again, what it means is that the small to medium-sized content providers don't have that sort of bargaining power. So are they meant to involve themselves in some form of collective bargaining? Do they need to form a union of providers and negotiate as a block? But it is difficult, you see, for them because their business model is being wholly undermined. The other way in which it might go is that Google, as its AI improves, could develop AI journalists that are good. Not just ones that will do, you know, weather report and market and stock reports and things, but AIs that will do investigative journalism, high quality journalism. And that can work, I guess, but then it means that the power and information is concentrated into even fewer hands. You know, they already are the gatekeepers. Now they're going to be the content behind the gatekeepers. And of course, you know, it fits into the wider narrative of AI replacing jobs. AI will replace the jobs of many journalists.
Already has.
Well, I think it already has, but I think it's done it. When we talk about the ways in which AI threatens jobs, we often talk about it as what it's doing, you know, oh, it'll do the basic jobs, it'll do, you know, the basics of journalism or the basics of this or the basics of that. But that's just because of where we are now. We will not become better as journalists, but AI journalists will continue to improve. There's no way that they won't improve. And there will come a point when, you know, you'll have teams of AI journalists investigating politicians and doing, you know, the sort of journalism that got rid of Nixon, for example. That sort of thing will come.
And when you say an AI journalist, do you mean an actual person using AI or an AI that is a journalist?
The latter.
Oh,
right. So you will have AIs that are recording artists, AIs that are film stars,
right.
AIs that are journalists, AIs that are entities in themselves that are not tools. So the sort of the bridging argument that's given to us so that we accept and we don't sort of riot in the streets is that these are tools that will make us more effective. Well, that's true, but only in a transitional sense, I believe. And we can see that the people who own, you know, and there's a handful of these frontier labs that produce, you know, AI systems. People like OpenAI produce ChatGPT, Google produce Gemini, Anthropic produce Claude. You know, there's a handful of these companies, and they will own the ability to produce journalists. So when you want a journalist, you may not hire one, you may buy one or rent one more likely. So it will be a bit like wages. It should be a bit cheaper, at least initially, until they've knocked out the human competition, then they can raise their prices as well. So this is very, very dangerous, both in terms of, you know, the economics of these businesses, but also in condensing the power over the information that we get even more tightly, you know, even more densely. And I think I don't see easy solutions. I do see solutions to this if there is a will, but they're not going to be easy because, for example, even if Google turned around and said, yes, we will pay. So at the moment, you know, we have pay-per-click. So when you do advertising, you pay for every click to your website. Well, maybe, you know, the model could be reversed and Google could pay per use. So every time it clicks onto a source that it has to pay. But the difficulty is that the way that Google AI search works. It doesn't just take it from one place. The answer that you get can be a conglomeration of information from many different websites, and it makes it much more complicated. Even if they were wanted to be fair, it makes it much more complicated for them to come up with a fair system that actually compensates businesses for the journalism that they do. And I fear that many, you know, news websites and other websites could go. And radio stations are not, you know, exempt from this because they have catch-up services. AIs can increasingly download these things, understand them, and summarize them in a way that can be very attractive, because if someone doesn't want to listen to a one-hour-long, you know, podcast or broadcast, they can now get a summary. I use this, so I try not to watch lengthy YouTube videos anymore. I tend to use YouTube for education rather than just entertainment. But some of the YouTube videos are a bit verbose. But I use Google Gemini to actually go in, either read the transcript or create a transcript and then summarize it for me and then discuss it with me.
Wow.
And you see, and that's, you know, so I can maybe, because, you know, video and audio is entertaining, but it's not the most efficient way of getting information in.
Mm.
So if that's what you're after, then these tools can already do that. Now, if instead of me delving into it, you know, the search engine starts to delve into it, then broadcasters are not safe either.
Okay, now we've got a couple of minutes left. On that happy note, let's talk about something a bit more basic. We can have a quick word about a gadget with your gadget detective hat on. And actually, this is, it's a chair.
I know, so, I don't think I've reviewed a chair before.
No.
But this is not just any old chair, and I love mine and I don't want to give it back. But it's by, it's from a company called Libernovo, so Liber Novo. It's called the Omni Dynamic Ergonomic Office Chair. So it's an office chair. It costs about £1,000. So that's the first thing to say about it. It's not cheap, but it's not unique. There are, you know, like the Herman Miller brand has chairs that are much more expensive than that, that do a lot less.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the chair I'm sitting in now, I believe, is about £1,000. And it is, I don't know what make it is, but they've lasted a long time and they are very comfortable.
They are, and for £1,000...
So tell, what features does a £1,000 chair need to justify that cost, then?
So first of all, when you look at it, and I don't know if you see the pictures that I've sent you, but if you look at it in profile, where your spine is, there's a second spine of the chair, like an exoskeleton from the film Alien, you know, where you see this highly articulated spine which moves with you and matches your spinal curve much more precisely. So with a normal chair, you get like a foam bulge that is meant to be the lumbar support, and that's, you know, pretty much it. This has got 8 flexible panels, which are like vertebrae, really, and then 14 dual connection points and 16 spherical pivot points. So this thing moves with you. That's the first thing. It moves with you in order to support your spine fully in any position. It also moves in another way. When you recline in the chair, and you can recline all the way back, I've slept in mine, it's quite comfortable, because you can buy it with a footrest as well. But when you recline back, it moves the angle of the headrest, and the arms move as well, because as you move back, the arms in a normal chair stay forward and don't support you anymore, whereas this tilts your head forward so you can still see a screen even when you're reclining and you've still got your arms supported. The other thing is it's motorized. It's got this spinal decompression system. So as you lean back, it uses a motor. It's got a battery. It lasts about a month on a charge. And it sort of decompresses your spine as you move back. It sort of almost stretches you a little bit. It's like an omni-stretch. It's not a violent stretch or a torture implement or anything like that. But it's quite invigorating. You know, it's really, instead of your spine getting all compressed, it sort of stretches you out and just makes you really comfortable. So you've got this dynamic movement, you've got the fact that it supports you in any position. It's quite a remarkable chair, and it looks like a work of art, frankly. When you look at it, it looks It just reminds me of Alien when I look
at it. It looks a bit like, yes, you should be sort of running a starship or something.
Yeah, yeah, but it looks like it's maybe living. Mm. It's got a sort of spine of its own. Right. So it's a highly advanced chair. The good thing is these people, they do a 30-day... You can buy it on Amazon, in which case you get a 30-day money-back guarantee, but their website, which is libanovo.com, it's got 30-day, what they call a risk-free trial, and a 30-day price guarantee, which I think means if the price drops, you're covered. So it's these things are very personal. I really liked it, and it's won design awards and all the rest of it. But I would say wherever you buy it from, be it Amazon or Libanovo, make sure that you've got the opportunity to return it if it doesn't work for you, because it's a lot of money. But the chair was, I think it was originally about £1,250. It's now about £985, but it bumps up over £1,000 when you get the footrest or the spare battery pack as well. But I've never before had a chair with a motor and a battery pack in it. It's quite
right. It's, and quite, what's it
remarkable.
Called?
It's called the Libanovo Omni Dynamic Ergonomic Chair.
Okay.
I know it's a mouthful. But it is quite a remarkable chair. I gave it 4.5 stars out of 5, and you may know that I've never ever given anything 5 out of 5. It's if it suits you well, you know, and it, particularly if you're not a spring chicken, I think this sort of chair can be a real game changer. I wouldn't say life changing necessarily, but it can just make sitting for extended periods much more comfortable. It's a much happier experience. I now actually work a bit more because I don't have to, you know, feel uncomfortable in my chair. So I found it good. I've also found it good for watching movies or films. So I when I've got a big screen and I do my sort of surround sound cinema and all that, I use this. And I say I've even inadvertently slept in it.
Well, Fevzi, thank you so much for that. Fevzi Turkalp there from GadgetDetective.com.